Hello, I'm Sebastian. Welcome to Nine Nartrees Podcast. Today, I will summarize and review the book, Fixing Global Finance is a Work of Economic Analysis by Martin Wolf. The Financial Times chief economics commentator published as part of the Forum on Constructive Capitalism series, written in the shadow of the 2007 to 2008 financial crisis. The book examines why the global financial system repeatedly generates large imbalances, sudden reversals of capital flows, currency crisis, banking stress, and unsustainable borrowing. Its central concern is not only Wall Street risk-taking, but the wider international pattern in which emerging economies accumulate reserves and export savings while the United States absorbs much of that surplus as the borrower and spender of last resort. Wolf connects balance of payments data, exchange rate policy, capital mobility, and domestic credit expansion into a single explanation of financial fragility. The book is aimed at readers who want a policy-oriented account of global finance, especially economists, investors, public officials, and informed general readers comfortable with macroeconomic reasoning. I will give you key takeaways from this book. Firstly, global imbalances as the structural source of financial instability. A central argument of fixing global finance is that financial crises cannot be understood only as failures of banks, regulators, or individual borrowers. Wolf places these failures inside a broader international structure of current account surpluses and deficits. When some economies save far more than they invest domestically, their surplus capital must flow somewhere. In the period before the crisis, much of it flowed into advanced economies, especially the United States. This created a pattern in which deficit countries consumed, borrowed, and absorbed foreign savings, while surplus countries accumulated claims on them. Wolf treats this not as a temporary accounting curiosity, but as a destabilizing mechanism. Large capital inflows can depress interest rates, inflate asset prices, and encourage credit expansion. When confidence changes, the same flows can reverse or expose hidden weaknesses. The book therefore reframes the subprime crisis as part of a global balance sheet problem. Domestic excess in the United States mattered, but it was amplified by a world system that supplied abundant external financing and treated American assets as exceptionally safe. Secondly, the United States as borrower and spender of last resort, Wolf gives particular attention to the role of the United States in absorbing global savings. In his analysis, the United States became the effective borrower and spender of last resort because its financial markets were deep, its currency was central to the international system, and global investors regarded its assets as liquid and secure. This role helped sustain demand in the world economy, but it also encouraged a dangerous dependence on American borrowing. The arrangement was politically convenient for surplus countries and financially profitable for intermediaries. Yet it made global stability depend on the willingness and ability of U.S. households, firms, and government institutions to keep taking on liabilities. Wolf argues that such a model is untenable. A rich country cannot indefinitely support global demand by expanding debt, especially when foreign inflows feed housing bubbles and consumer borrowing rather than productive investment. This perspective shifts the debate from narrow blame of American borrowers to a systemic question: why did the international financial order require one economy to absorb so much of the rest of the world's surplus savings? Thirdly, emerging economy reserve accumulation after earlier crises. The book explains the behavior of emerging economies by looking back at the crises of the 1980s and 1990s, including episodes in Latin America, Russia, and East Asia. Wolf argues that many emerging economies drew a clear lesson from those shocks: dependence on foreign currency, borrowing, and outside rescue packages was dangerous. To avoid future vulnerability, they sought large reserves, stronger external positions, and current account surpluses. This defensive strategy was understandable, but it produced unintended global consequences. By resisting currency appreciation, limiting external deficits, and accumulating foreign exchange reserves, emerging economies often exported capital rather than importing it. That outcome is paradoxical because poorer, faster-growing economies might be expected to use foreign capital to finance development. Wolf sees this as evidence of a malfunctioning global financial system. The system did not make emerging economies comfortable borrowing in their own currencies or relying on stable external finance. Instead, it encouraged self-insurance through reserve accumulation, which protected individual countries while contributing to collective imbalance. Fourthly, linking microeconomic finance with the macroeconomics of payments. In payments, one of the book's distinctive features is its attempt to connect the microeconomics of financial behavior with the macroeconomics of the balance of payments. Wolf does not treat mortgage lending, securitization, bank leverage, and investor appetite for safe assets as separate from exchange rates, national savings, and current account positions. His reasoning is that cross-border capital flows must enter domestic financial systems through concrete instruments and institutions. When foreign official reserves and private savings are invested in highly liquid securities, they influence yields, risk pricing, and the supply of credit. Financial innovation can then transform that cheap funding into complex claims that appear safe until losses emerge. This framework helps explain why a balance of payments surplus in one part of the world can contribute to fragile credit structures elsewhere. The argument is valuable because it avoids two incomplete explanations, one that blames only reckless bankers, and another that blames only abstract global imbalances. Wolf insists that the crisis resulted from the interaction between international capital flows and domestic financial incentives. Lastly, reform through domestic currency finance and coordinated global adjustment. Wolf does not present reform as a simple matter of tighter regulation in one country. He argues that a more stable system requires changes in how emerging economies interact with global capital. A key objective is to make fast-growing economies able to borrow sustainably in their own currencies, rather than relying on foreign currency debt or avoiding borrowing altogether. That would reduce currency mismatch risk and make capital importing less dangerous. He also emphasizes the need for surplus economies to shift toward stronger domestic demand, including consumption and services, so that growth is less dependent on exports and reserve accumulation. For deficit countries, reform implies reducing dependence on debt finance consumption and strengthening financial oversight. Because these adjustments affect exchange rates, trade patterns, reserves, and domestic politics, Wolf sees international coordination as essential. Institutions and forums involving major advanced and emerging economies are therefore central to the book's practical vision. The proposed solution is not anti-globalization, but a redesigned globalization in which capital flows support productive development rather than repeated boom and crisis cycles. In conclusion, Fixing Global Finance is best suited to readers who want to understand financial crises as international macroeconomic events rather than as isolated banking scandals. It will be most useful for students of economics, policy analysts, investors, journalists, and readers interested in how current account balances, exchange rates, reserve accumulation, and domestic credit booms interact. The practical benefit is a clearer framework for interpreting crises when capital appears abundant and cheap. The key question is where it is coming from, why it is moving, and what domestic risks it is financing. Intellectually, the book helps readers connect the Asian financial crisis, the rise of large emerging market reserves, U.S. external deficits, and the subprime mortgage collapse into one coherent pattern. Compared with many crisis books focused on traders, banks, or regulatory failure, this book stands out for its global balance of payments perspective. Wolf writes as a policy-oriented economic commentator, so the argument is analytical rather than narrative-driven. It may be demanding for readers without macroeconomic background, and its reform agenda is necessarily broad. Its strength lies in showing that fixing finance requires more than repairing banks. It requires changing the international conditions that make destabilizing capital flows seem rational to everyone involved. If you would like to support Martin Wolf, you can buy the book through the Amazon link I've provided in the podcast description. After reading the book, please let me know what you think and share your thoughts. See you around.